What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. It is Jamie Dodd and my co-host Thomas Drantz here. Drantz, of course, covering the team for The Athletic as well. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650, 650, that's the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. What's going on, Drantz?
Looking forward to playing fourth line minutes tonight, but scoring a sick goal in the shootout.
What would the equivalent of playing fourth line minutes for you be? Just like not talking as much?
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess.
I mean, in 650 terms, I probably do play fourth line minutes, right?
I don't know about that.
Sat plays top line.
Sat is the workhorse. Yes.
Bruff and Halford play the sheltered minutes where they get to like put up the points. You know what I mean? And like everyone's like, wow, those guys are the MVPs.
Yes, that's correct. No, sheltered minutes is a good way to put it. Yeah.
Ton of power play one time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we might be fourth line grinders, man. You and I might be plumbers.
Jeez, man.
What?
I like to think of myself more as the puce suitor.
Yeah.
Slide everywhere around the lineup.
Totally. And no matter what you do, I'm there in the background being like, my guy!
Looking for a big raise this summer. Me and puce suitor, a lot of similarities.
Perfect. So, and then I think I'm, you know, Max Sasson or something.
I like Max Sasson, but don't sell yourself short. By the way, are we back to Sasson?
Oh,
Shorty was like, we're back to Sasson.
Okay.
But he didn't elaborate. He was just like, no, the Sasson era is over. We're back to Sasson.
Okay. We're back to Sasson.
I guess we're back to Sasson.
We're back to Sasson.
Didn't last very long.
No more French affectation. We're going Anglo-Sasson.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go. Okay, let's start the. Let's open the.
That was.
Oh my goodness.
Open the whiteboard.
Anyways, hold on before we go to the whiteboard. no Dimitri today. He's still enjoying some time off around the holidays. But
he's in Mexico, man.
Oh wow,
I know.
Good for him. But Landon Ferraro will join us in studio for an hour starting at 12:30. So always look forward to that, and a lot to get into. Of course, game last night, game tonight. So let's go right to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, January 3rd, starting with the headlines. The Canucks hold on or something to beat the Kraken 4-3 in a shootout last night. Rare shootout victory for the Canucks in Seattle after blowing another third period lead to the Kraken in that game. But they do get the 2 points in this one thanks to JT Miller's shootout winner. And a lot of interesting storylines coming out of this one. We should talk about, first and foremost, I think, Thatcher Demko and him leaving the game in the second period and Kevin Lankinen coming in relief. And I think everyone watching, Canucks fans, had the exact same reaction, which was, uh-oh, what's going on with Thatcher Demko? This was his seventh start since returning from the popliteus injury that had kept him out so long. There was always going to be that fear when Thatcher Demko was back in the crease that, is it going to happen again? Is he going to re-injure himself? How durable, how stable is he? So there was that moment of panic, and then Rick Tocchet after the game saying, nope, it's not the knee, it's back spasms. Now, that's not serious is also what Rick Tocchet said. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet maybe later in the show. He offered just a little bit of an update today, but still more of the same. He's not going to play tonight. Demko has back spasms. So massive news that it's not a knee re-injury for Thatcher Demko, but still he ends up leaving the game and Kevin Lankinen comes in relief.
Yeah. And you know, I remember in real time when he stopped Bjorkstrand and Sharon Govich, by the way, Canucks better be sending these gentlemen some bouquets. My goodness. So Demko, first of all, Demko kept the Canucks in that game, right? By rights, based on how many glorious opportunities the Canucks were surrendering in the first 7 minutes or so, that game probably should have been 2-0, and it's a very different contest. Like, I thought Demko, obviously the Chandler Stephenson one was a poor goal,
yes,
one he'd want back, but from that point until he left, he was a brick wall.
He was excellent, yeah.
And I honestly, so I was tracking it thinking, man, this might be one of those signature, like, tough goal, shut the door kind of performances from a guy who's you know, maybe beginning to trend in the right direction. And then the second Bjorkstrand breakaway that he stops, stymies, I thought his recovery was slow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, play goes the other way. Canucks sort of get a chance. Play goes the other way. Kraken mismanaged the puck. Play goes the other way. Connor Garland scores 2-1. Huge shift in the game. And then Demko leaves. And I thought his recovery in that play was a bit, like, tender. And then, obviously, they found that broadcast angle from the first period. Lankanen saying post-game that he had a sense that he was going in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good that the team knew that it was back spasms, because after the Juulsen collision, right, which was Demko initiating the contact, by the way, I saw a lot of criticism of Noah Juulsen, which I think is increasingly misplaced.
Well, this guy's
actually playing well.
Guys, it's hockey. Guys bump into each other.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, no, Juulsen, how could you do that? Like, what are you talking about?
How could you play hockey and occupy space on the ice, you jerk? No. I feel like Juulsen's also become like a watchword for the Canucks' tough defensive personnel, and I think he's playing really well. So I just, anyway, slight, and we'll move on quickly, defense of Noah Juulsen. But Demko did look like he was grabbing the left knee, which is, of course, the knee that he had the tear in. And, you know, I think in retrospect, he was probably just checking it and then being like, oh, phew, it's not that.
Yeah.
You know, which is great. I do sort of wonder, though, you know, the team, obviously, Lankanen suggesting that the team knew, right, or Lankanen knew, that Demko was at least fighting through something unrelated to his lower body issues. And so when he left, you know, there's no emotional blow from like what's happened.
They
to
weren't going through what viewers were going through, right?
Exactly.
They weren't like, uh-oh, what's going on with Demko?
Right.
Yeah.
And that matters because, I mean, that was a critical moment in the game. The Canucks kept pouring it on through the second period, controlled the first bit of the third period ably, built on their lead. I do sort of think, though, like that experience that viewers had, that we had watching that, where it's just like, oh, no. How does Canucks management view it?
Mm.
Because Kevin Lankanen became extension eligible on July 1. Both Patrick
January
Aldean,
1st.
What did I say?
July 1.
January 1. July 1 is the start of the hockey new year.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be clear. That's the start of it's the first day of the league year. So there you go. That's my, anyway. On January 1, he became eligible to sign an extension. Both Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford have publicly entertained the idea that, hey, while we don't like to spend on a backup, this might be a unique situation. Do moments like that one last night, even if it's not serious, even if it's unrelated to the knee, does that add maybe not urgency, but like impetus for the club to consider locking in some real stability over a multi-year time horizon? You know, that's sort of one thing that I wonder in the wake of it, especially once you heard Lankanen say post-game that, you know, he had a sense that it was going to happen. Once we understood that the worst had been avoided, right? So the Canucks aren't going to be on the back foot in sort of going over these decisions. But as the team holds their midseason meetings over the next few weeks, like, I'm sure the long-term vision of how this club wants to be set up in net is going to play a role in that, and obviously Demko's durability has to be a top line consideration given that he himself will become extension eligible on July 1.
Well, and the other factor here, right, is that Kevin Lankanen came in and played really well. So it's both sides of the coin. It's the reason you might want stability, and then it's the guy who's showing you, like, hey, I can be a really legitimate option here, and he had to make some really impressive saves early on after he came into the game.
Lankanen has played so well, I think, that we're at the point that when I was considering, like, what does this look like if Demko misses a week? Right? Like, if this is a short-ish term injury, but the Canucks have this back-to-back set tonight, which Shelov's apparently is airdropped in for from Laval. Laval? How do you say it with an accent?
I don't know.
Okay.
I would say Laval, but Laval. I am the farthest thing from a competent French speaker you can get, so I have no idea.
You went to school there, so I asked. I thought you were...
Didn't learn any French.
Wow. Good for you. You went to summer camp in Montreal during the winter. So Shelov's has joined the team, but you do have a pretty condensed January schedule here.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Like, what the Canucks are looking at is extremely condensed in terms of, you know, Montreal Monday, right? So you at least get the weekend off to adjust to the East Coast, but then Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. So you've got the back-to-back set, Hurricanes, Maple Leafs. Really crucial you have Demko back for one of those. Tuesday in Winnipeg, Thursday in Vancouver, Saturday in Vancouver, Monday in Vancouver. Like, it's a complete hamster wheel here.
Yeah.
Games every second night, basically through the eighth, through sort of the break, the pause for the Four Nations faceoff. And we're at the point where if Demko was to miss a week, my analysis wouldn't be like, in Demko's absence, the Canucks are going to get worse goaltending. My analysis would center on like the cost to the team being that this team has not had reliable backup goaltending. And with Lankinen now being sort of their starter, moving up the depth chart temporarily, what are they going to get from Artur Shilovs? Like, yes. We've reached that point where I think we almost look at Lankinen and Demko as being, you know, we know that Demko has higher upside, but we also know that he hasn't been, he's still shaking off the rust, I think. We kind of understand that. The real gap, the real distinction is what the Canucks have after Lankinen, and that fall off is pretty steep right now.
Yeah.
Certainly from a confidence perspective.
Well, that's the thing, right, about earning the coach's trust. And Lankinen has easily surpassed that bar. He's jumped well over that bar, right, where there is no fear whatsoever about starting him, playing him, relying on him
for a stretch of games. Like, he loves the guy.
Yeah. And so I think that's important, too, when you're considering, as you said, okay, they don't like to spend on backup goaltending, but if it's a guy who's come in really difficult circumstances, earned the respect of the coach, earned the trust of the coach, performed really well for you, and your starter still has durability concerns, and I think it's important that even if it's not the Poplatius, right, your decision on Thatcher Demko is not just limited to that injury that it's contingent on, right? It's about his ability to stay healthy overall that you're going to make your part of your decision on. So if you have any questions about that, then yeah, all of a sudden the Kevin Lankinen option starts to make a lot more sense. I know you and I were talking back in December about how much the team likes to get done in January. Obviously they might have some other significant things on their plate right now that they're talking about that maybe we can get into in the broadsheet, but the Kevin Lankinen thing, if there's a deal to be made there and an extension, the more he comes in, the more there's questions about Demko, the more sense it makes to try to get a deal done there. All right, quickly on the rest of the game for the Canucks. I mean, overall, I thought it was a pretty solid performance.
Yeah, me too.
From the Canucks. They, you know, defense
played really well.
Flat out of the gate. Thatcher Demko let in a goal he probably didn't like, a soft one, but then he was really good and he kept them in the game, let the team find their legs. And then they played pretty well. Connor Garland was excellent. I thought it was a pretty good game from Tyler Myers, obviously scores the goal. So
the defense was fantastic.
Yeah.
You're really happy to see Guillaume Brisebois play well.
Yeah.
And I thought he did actually materially play well. The club was able to control play with their middle six forward group on the ice, right? You had really strong games from Hoglander, Sherwood, I think Bluger. Garland obviously was sort of the main driver of it, which, you know, not a shock,
mm-hmm.
but in the absence of this team's most important engine, which is their top pair, right? Garland's contributions should take on a pretty high level of importance here.
I also don't know that Garland's been at the level he was to start the year for a little bit, right? So it was good to see him kind of have one of those really, really strong Connor Garland play driving performances.
Yeah.
I think it had been a little bit of a while. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
right?
No, and he was just everywhere. And you're right. I think it has been like a quiet couple of weeks for Connor Garland, which, you know, you'd take that if we were saying that about some of Vancouver's other high-profile players.
Yep. Absolutely.
Anyway, I thought the Canucks played really well. I thought they were pretty unfortunate on the third goal against, and then obviously the JT Miller penalty, which helped the Kraken get back in the game with the power play goal, the Matty Beniers power play goal. That was a tough penalty. That was not one that JT Miller will have liked, and fair enough. But I thought, yeah, I know they couldn't hold on to a lead, and really they end up earning a tie against the Kraken, mm-hmm. but a tie with an extra point. But I didn't think they were like full value for coughing up a 3-1 lead in the third period. You know what I mean?
It wasn't like the horror show that the other one was, right? It's like, oh my gosh, they're unraveling. It was more of a like, hey, coughing up a 2-goal lead happens sometimes in today's NHL kind of thing.
Well, it's especially because the third goal was so fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The undisciplined penalty that you need to clean up. That's something that you look at and say, oh, that sucks. But the third goal was so, the Vince Dunn goal was so fortunate for the Kraken, like such a dumb one that I just don't think you That is the type of goal that can happen when you're holding a late lead
exactly,
in the NHL.
Right? And the teams are just throwing things at the net, and there's an extra guy on the ice, so there's screens and all of that, right? So I don't think it was... It's connected, obviously, because they had just coughed up that lead in spectacular fashion to the same team less than a week before, but it's different.
I think the thing is that this Canucks team in its current state is limited, mm-hmm. and when you are limited... For example, right? Even if you do extend your 2-1 lead to be a 3-1 lead, you're not getting the 4-1 goal, or you're not getting the 4-2 goal. You know what I mean? Or you're not controlling play well enough that you're getting the breakout pass for the empty net goal. And so your margin just disappears. And I do think that's where the Canucks are, where even a 2-goal lead against against a pop gun offensive team like the Kraken is still fragile because this Canucks team's top gear is so low at the moment, given their absences.
The other interesting note from last night was the JT Miller ice time thing, and he was played the fewest minutes at 5-on-5 for the Canucks. And you know, even overall, if you look at total minutes in a game where they played 5 minutes of overtime. He played 15:40 in that game.
Yeah,
right.
And he had a 90-second overtime shift that really makes that data look better than it was.
Yeah. And
I'm not criticizing him for a 90-second overtime shift.
No.
I want to say I want JT Miller out for more of overtime.
Well, that's what I mean. But part of it, it's interesting that despite playing 5 minutes of overtime, it's still so low because JT Miller, you know, especially without Elias Pettersson, like you wouldn't be surprised to have him out there for 3 minutes of overtime. You know what I mean? Of a 5 minute overtime. And instead it was only 90 seconds. And, you know, Nils Höglander got a shift in there.
Yeah,
He didn't start overtime, which was surprising. And it's kind of an interesting one because as Sat noted on social media, on Twitter, if you look at the number of shifts, I think he led the team, but he was just getting off the ice really quick. His average shift length was like just a hair over 30 seconds, like 33 seconds, something like that. So, you know, Rick Tocchet was asked about it today and basically said, because the ice time was low for DeBrusque and Besser as well at 5-on-5.
Yeah, it's not like there was a moment where you were like, oh, has he been benched?
No, exactly. Oh, he's missing this turn with, you know, DeBrusque and Besser are out there with Blueger or something like that, right? Like that didn't happen. It was low for all three of them. And Rick Tocchet basically said, yeah, other guys were going. So they deserved a little more ice time, but it was just kind of odd watching it. You know, even the power play shift where he goes off after 30 seconds, it could just be as simple as Rick Tocchet wanted to spread the ice time around. As he said, you know, other guys were going, so bumped that up and bumped the top line's ice time down. But it definitely caught my eye watching the game last night.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a quiet night for JT Miller. I thought he mostly played well. I mean, he had the key assist on the Myers goal. That was a huge moment in the game.
Yep.
You know, the shootout goal, whatever. It's a lovely move. I mean, JT Miller's shootout move is one of the best in Canucks history. I don't know if it's Trevor Linden level, but I think it's Alex Burrow's level.
Mm.
Like, I think it's one of the most reliable finishing moves that this franchise has ever seen. And there's value there in the extra point you get, although it was Vancouver's first shootout win in 650 days.
That's incredible.
Like, shootouts are not a huge part of the game.
No.
Like they used to be. I think there's an awful lot that could be going on here, right? There is a back-to-back set.
Yes.
Tocchet suggested that part of it was that Miller wasn't going and his other lines were, which was obviously true. There could be some injury management. There could be that JT Miller's had taken some criticism locally and nationally for shifts that were too long and was in his head about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. So I don't know exactly what was happening there, but it's certainly notable, especially given, I mean, I think the noise. Well,
especially given Pedersen's absence, right? And that, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, you're down who's supposed to be your other top forward. You expect, okay, JT Miller, it's time to really step up. And look, they won the game, right? So it's not as if it backfired or anything like that. I'm not even bringing this up as criticism of the coach or the player. I just think it's interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see where it goes and learn more about it.
No, it's definitely interesting. And you know, I mean, I would argue right now, like I'm trying to think about it, but have you ever seen the noise around a player be louder than it is around JT Miller right now?
I mean, I don't know, JT Miller like 2 years ago. You know what I mean?
I think this is louder.
All of my other examples would be JT Miller related, I think.
Oh, man, I think you're right. But I think this feels louder. I don't know what it is or why, but I think maybe it's the lineup of former teammates that I think put it into a different stratosphere, or the fact that it was like six different insiders with competing information all giving updates on the same day.
Yeah.
But it feels like every...
And speaking of...
What?
It's time for the broadsheet.
Okay, let's get to it. Anyway, it's wild. And so in that context, though, him having low ice time feels especially pointed. Right?
Yeah, it's true, right? Like
I don't want to say I feel bad for the guy, but it's just like, is this just something we ritualistically do? Like, Canucks have won 2 of 7. Time to dust out the Miller to the Rangers trade rumors. Let's amp up the...
This is 3 out of the last 4 years. This time of year, Miller to the Rangers is hot topic.
Does it feel... I don't know. How real is it? And how much is this just a fact of life, a state of play anytime the Canucks lose a run of games? I just a genuine thing that I wonder as I hear the latest like slash fiction about the Rangers and Chris Drury's interest.
I think we're all wondering.
JT Miller.
I think we're all wondering that. Yeah, I think the only people that know are in the New York Rangers front office and the Canucks front office. But I think that's a very valid and popular question right now. Like, is this a thing or is it just this recurring cycle that we're doing over and over again?
And the Rangers are like, Chris Drury is Lou Lamoriello Jr.
Yes.
Right. So it's like the Rangers are such an easy team to be rumored to be involved because they're never going to publicly deny it.
Mm-hmm. They don't talk. Yeah.
They don't talk at all. He's not going to like, he's not even going to call Larry Brooks and be like, kill them for this. Like, that's not even going to happen. So it's just like, it's such a noise vacuum. Anyway, just want to put that out there that like every day I wake up and hear a new Rangers Miller thing or like, and it just feels like I'm in a time warp and it feels like it's like a symptom. Like the sickness is the Canucks have won 2 of 7, and the symptom is the Rangers won't trade Braden Schneider for Miller. I don't think they'd consider that. And it's like, really? Have they watched Braden Schneider play this year?
Yeah. Anyway, didn't that make a lot more sense 2 years ago than it does now? I don't know.
It does before he looked like a third pair defenseman.
Yeah. Anyways.
Anyway.
All right. Speaking of, guess what? JT Miller to the Rangers. It's out there, Drancer, on the broadsheet. Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts today going into some more detail. He spoke yesterday on the Fan Hockey Show, so some overlap here. We won't play any audio. I'll just try to run through it really quickly. I understand that some people's patience for this is wearing thin.
Specifically mine.
I completely get it, but look, we're not going to ignore it, right?
No,
we have a segment in the whiteboard that we do it in. We're going to run through it quickly.
We're going to always give you the latest. We're just also going to make fun of it.
Yes, absolutely. So here's a quick rundown from Friedman. He's saying around the league is whether the Canucks would really consider trading Pettersson, or are they just trying to send a message here? Also compares it to the Jack Eichel situation, which I think is very apt, a very similar thing, right? Where it seems like maybe the relationship is on the rocks and a very, very talented player becomes available unexpectedly, saying teams would jump at the opportunity if Pettersson was out there. Further on, Miller says he might consider waiving his no move clause, but he's not asking for a trade. Says he's not sure there's a match to be made between the Canucks and the Rangers, that the Rangers, again, on Schneider, don't think they would want to do that. Brings up Chicago, which is interesting. Now he says that's more of a top of the head thing rather than reporting interest. Although I did note that your colleague Scott Powers was speculating, could the Blackhawks try to add a big name forward in free agency in the summer to get some help for Connor Bedard? And the interesting thing about Chicago as a possible trade partner, right, is they don't have much that entices at the NHL level, but tons of picks, tons of prospects, and then you're back into the Philip Roenick thing, kind of, right? Where you get the raw assets in, and then you look around the league for the piece that you really want that helps you more in the present than the picks and the prospects that you get. And then we should also mention, of course, that Elliot Friedman reiterates the team's preference is to keep both players and have them figure it out in some way. Rick Dhaliwal echoing a lot of that and mentioning that the Canucks, this is on Halford and Brough this morning, Canucks really like Braden Schneider, really like Alexis Lafreniere as well. If they're not doing Schneider, I don't see why they're doing Lafreniere.
The same tier of player.
Yes.
I was a big Braden Schneider fan when he was a prospect, but like at some point you are a third pair defenseman until you prove otherwise.
Yeah, at some point the prospect shine wears off.
But I think it wears off in real NHL value circles before it wears off in terms of how players are talked about.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, we are now 243 games into Braden Schneider's career, and he's been a good player who's never hit 20 points, and, like, really has been mostly a 15, like, he's averaged 16 minutes a night. Like, he's an authoritative player with a lot of skill, and he's still young, and don't get me wrong, that would be an awesome ad for a lot of teams, but, I mean, he hasn't been the solution on a Rangers defense corps where they just traded for Will Borgen because they needed help on the right side. Like, I don't know. You got to be careful with some of these.
Final thing I'll note is that Play Now is offering odds on who gets traded before the start of next season between JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. Neither is at minus 400, the favorite. That makes sense. Miller plus 200, Pettersson plus 300, both is at plus 1900. So there you go. If you've got a hunch, you have a chance to make some money on it at Play Now. Quick lineup notes. As mentioned, Lankinen and Nat Schieloffs has been recalled, so it looks like he'll back up. No Pettersson or Hughes tonight, but both are going to be on the road trip with the team after this game per Tocchet. And also didn't confirm, but sounds like he was pretty happy with how the blue line performed. Could be the same six D-men lining up against Nashville tonight. Quick playoff and standings update. Canucks playoff odds in Dom's model tick up to 79%. They were at 77% yesterday. Utah beat Calgary in regulation as well. In addition to the Canucks win, the model sees Utah as the Canucks' most legit challenger, so they keep pace a little bit with the Canucks per Dom's model.
And that's exactly right. You know, like, one thing about Seattle, you're watching that Seattle team last night, like, they're not.
Did they scream they're going on a run to get in the playoff race?
Ahead of the Canucks. No. You watch the Blues, they're not finishing ahead of the Canucks. Calgary, maybe, but I don't think they're going to have enough juice. It's the script that where things get dicey for the Canucks is the Avs heat up, which is going to happen.
Yes.
And Utah reels off like a 675, 650 point percentage between now and the end of the year. And as part of that, adds to their roster with a big swing.
Mm-hmm.
That is the doomsday scenario to monitor as like something that could actually occur, in my opinion. Anyway, fun.
Gambling update quickly for us tonight.
Sure. The Canucks are hosting the Nashville Predators. And by the way, sorry, I know we have to go to break. But by the way, when the Canucks took warmups and unveiled their lineup last night with Guillaume Brisebois in for Eric Brandstrom, the line moved. They moved from minus 115 to plus 105, which I don't know that I've ever seen. The Nashville Predators are pretty heavy favorites tonight. Minus 185 on the money line. Canucks plus 155, starting a goaltender in the second leg of a back-to-back, and, of course, playing a second leg of a back-to-back with a roster that as the fact that they were dogs last night in Seattle shows you. You know, this is not a team that gamblers are particularly hot at betting on.
All right, that's the whiteboard for today. Landon Ferraro joins us in studio for an hour next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.